no place to escape to.
This is the last podcast
on the left.
Side stories.
Yeah, you love your glaze.
That's when the cannibalism started.
Side stories. Yes. Man, it's good to have something to live for. I'll
absolutely. You have to have something to live for.
You got to. You got to have a drive. So recently what happened to me is that in the parking lot of where the office is, studio is here, my car got sideswiped.
Sure.
Right?
Well, who doesn't?
Somebody
you know what, Henry? Your car was kissed by another car, maybe a Mazda Miata.
Yeah,
Maybe it was a sexy, beautiful car, came by, said, I love that Prius, and
the
gave you a little kiss.
The last time I got kissed where that kiss was worth $1,500, I married the woman, all right, and I love her. But the problem is that they hit the car, right? So they need to leave a note.
No.
And they fucked up the whole bumper. And now bumpers are all filled with technology, right?
Uh-huh.
So you go, and it turns out to be exorbitantly expensive because they have all these safety monitors on the sides of the they have to fix all these sensors, and they can just say it's broken. You don't have to. So, you know, there's no proof because I don't know.
Well, it's definitely
broken. I'm not a fucking car man.
Well, it's
I'm not Tim Allen.
No, I mean, I don't even think Tim Allen could be a car man today. You got to have your degree. You got to have an IT degree to be a car man these days. I remember when we used to call them, they were like grease hogs, and they were always I can turn that and screw. And now it's like
grease monkeys.
Whatever.
Kessel, it's grease monkeys. Allow them to be higher on the food chain than a bunch of hogs.
Whatever. And now you need Data from Star Trek in there being like, I can fix your car for you.
I have no emotions. I do not look at your car like a child like you do.
Uh-huh.
I was fixed. But this is the thing, right? So whoever did it left a chunk of orange paint on the back of the bumper.
Uh-oh.
And I took a picture of it because now the car's in the shop. So now what I've been doing is every day.
You're a psycho.
I'm trailing through the park.
I know what you're doing.
Going to each car that the color
you
looks
are a
similar.
Psychopath. Okay,
no,
so you're hunting your neighborhood for slime. You're looking for the slime monster, and now you're also playing Junior Detective Henry Zebrowski, trying to find a car that has a matching paint swab as yours.
I didn't get asked to do this. This got thrust upon me.
My God.
I didn't want to be an amateur detective. Other people are making me do this. Society is making me do this. And so yesterday, I'm trolling around this car, right? And I'm looking around and I'm, you know, obviously I look like you'd say what your term was, a psychopath, because I'm walking, I'm looking for any marks on this car, and I see this family come to, and now I'm hiding underneath the car. Like, I go and I hide for them coming through, because just in case they're, either it's them or and then a part of me thinks,
what are you
gonna do? Am I hiding? I'm not the one who broke the law.
Are you going to beat up the family? You're going to beat up a family of five because you have a small scratch in your car that you can't figure out how to fix?
I am going to say this. I don't know what I'll do if I discover who hit the car.
You know what? I know what you're going to do.
I'm going to hurt him.
You're going to do nothing. You're going to be like, that's phase two. Right now you're in phase one. You're in the hunting phase. You're like, I'm out here. I'm in the woods. I got my little bow and arrow. Got some beers. Got some beef jerky. I'm going to find some deer. And then you don't realize once you see a deer, you got to kill it, and then you have to gut it.
No,
that's what you sort of have to do.
I sort of understand the checks I'm writing for myself that I'll have to cash later on. But what I really want to do is I just want to scratch I know into the bumper or into the hood with my keys.
You want to make this a 90s teen horror film. Great. All right. This is Side Stories, everyone. I am Ben Kissel with Henry Zebrowski. Utterly upset over in Los Angeles. We got a lot of stuff to get to today. We're going to read some of Michelle Carter text messages. We have a couple of funny stories. We also had some great emails this week that we're going to get to about Skinwalker Ranch. And also we had someone who went to school with Conrad Roy, of course, the man who committed suicide at the behest of Michelle Carter. But first things first, there's one story that we've been getting sent like a lot, like 10 times a week, about this woman who ate her husband over 3 years. It's not a true story, so don't bother sending it. If you want to know if the story is true, just type it into the Google machine, and if Snopes is the first thing that comes up, it tends to be
completely fake. But no, we are trying to be better at also not broadcasting fake stories, because we have been fooled.
Penance?
And we don't want to be fooled anymore. I want to be Roger Daltrey about this.
Absolutely. But the first
not get fooled again, tight old man.
I hear you, buddy. My go-to example would be Penn and Teller. They have a show called Fool Us. And it's actually very good.
Love that show. That is a kind of one of my, that's my alone post-masturbation, like when I'm just coasting for eye bleach on the internet, I watch a lot of Fool Us.
Yeah. Well, it's, I don't know how they do anything. They're
magic
so incredible. Magic is incredible. But the first thing we're going to talk about, there is a new documentary out. I believe it's Amazon Prime. And it is called Lorena. And it is about Lorena Bobbitt. And I got to say, it's a four-part series. Season one, I don't think they need to make a season two. I think we got it. But holy hell, that story is so much bigger than I remember with my 13-year-old brain growing up in Wisconsin.
Natalie and I were talking about this, about how, like, I remember, I mean, because it trickled down into us just talking and make cock jokes.
Cock jokes.
It was all just about cutting off penises and throwing penises, and we were having a wonderful time. But then when they showed the footage, because they did a couple of those gotcha moments, a couple of the jump scares with that cut off cock.
Oh, my God.
And it looks like a Duchamp painting. It looks like surrealist painting with the way the clean cut of the penis shaft and just his balls there, and it's kind of nicely composed.
Well, you know, that's the thing. So they're just going through the documentary. She's like, and then
Do people not know who Lorena Bobbitt is?
All right, so just
that you must. If you are listening to this show, you're probably 35.
Quick backstory, right? Lorena Bobbitt, her husband John Bobbitt, he was extremely abusive. She cut off his penis. He came home hammered. She cut off his penis. She takes it into the car with her. She throws it into the not even a wooded area. It's just sort of in the grass by a stop sign. And
it was a retention pond. It was right outside of the 7-Eleven.
Yes, and that became national news. And, of course, she ended up getting a lot of love, Lorena did, from battered women and from women in general. Being like, what the hell did this guy do to deserve to get his dongler cut off and cleanly, like freaking H.H. Holmes did it or something.
And I know that they were really trying to pinpoint this guy because she ran this concept of being innocent because of insanity, right? That saying in the moment she had been raped in her sleep by him, he came home drunk, he forced himself on her, he rolled off in a moment of pure rage, she went blank, she went to the kitchen, she said she opened the refrigerator door, a shaft of light from the refrigerator fell upon the knife, and then yada yada yada, she's driving. In her testimony, she's driving with the knife in one hand and his dick in the other, and she just wakes up, looks at the cock, throws it out the window, drives all the way to her work in a fucking, like a sleepwalk scenario, goes, tosses the knife into a trash can because her boss was kind of a protector of hers, and she would tell her kind of what was going on inside of the house. But it is interesting to watch the defense, like, really trying to, like, find an actual reason, like, saying that, no, you knew the difference between a right and wrong in the moment. And I'm sort of like, because Natalie, I'm talking about, it's like, it doesn't really matter if she knew or what she was doing anymore, because the amount of abuse led up to, the stakes up to the point where essentially she was fighting for her life.
Yes, she really was. And of course, a lot of people speculated, why would she go to work? Oh, so calm, like just going to work the next day. But that's where she would go. Oftentimes she would sleep in her car in the parking lot. Evidently it wasn't that night that John was being horrible, but it was all, I mean, it was just a collection of horrible abusive.
That's more of the problems of what they were talking about. The domestic violence and the investigation of domestic violence is really difficult because it's a one-on-one thing. It's within the privacy of someone's home. So it's he said, she said, or he said, she said, she said. It's like, it is that all the time, and it's very difficult to prove
and of course,
what is reality. But you look at the history of abuse she had, and obviously, and how many times she had called the cops on him, and then when the woman went to go get her nails done by her, and when she lifted up the sleeves and she saw bruises from her wrists up to her fucking elbows, she was obviously in duress and she definitely was in danger.
Absolutely,
of being murdered because he was going to murder her.
Oh, absolutely, he was going to murder her. And as a matter of fact, a little bit later on, and this is full of spoilers. Should we spoil the whole thing or just?
You just watch it. You're going to watch
it. But
it's rage porn anyway. It's just more of the The documentary does a good job of pointing to what a waste of life John Wayne Bobbitt ended up becoming.
Yes, really horrible.
The
and there's an interview with another woman because he ended up getting all these bizarre side jobs after the celebrity. Honestly, he got.
I remember
he
all the Howard Stern
money.
Shit.
All the Stern stuff.
Do you remember?
But anyway, so long story short, he ends up dating this girl from the Bunny Ranch. She takes him out of town all the way up here to upstate New York, and what he does to her is unbelievable. Ties her up for 3 days, tortures her for 3 days. She was about to die. He was about to carry her out in a body bag because he thought she was dead, and he opens the door, and she was able to sprint out. So he is a killer. John Wayne yes. Bobbitt is a killer. It's not cute. He's not like, I can't believe he got his dick cut off. What a funny porn. Frankenweiner, which is a funny name for a porno. But
he went and mutilated his own cock with an enlargement surgery.
On camera. But anyway, let's go back really quick. The funniest thing about this documentary is when the cops, so they're snooping around and they're looking for this dick. And when I thought about like John Wayne Bobbitt's dick, I guess I was thinking more like a dildo. I was thinking more, but in reality, because it's flaccid,
it shrinks up.
It's just tiny, like a little Smurf, like a little.
It's just this little head. Just the head of this dick.
Yeah, just like a little Smurf that hasn't seen the sun in forever, and it's totally pale like powder. And, of course, that's a great 90s movie, Powder. Check it out. And
no, so, do not check that movie out. Because it's directed by a child molester.
Oh, okay. Then don't. I didn't know that. When did that happen?
Yes. He got convicted of child molestation.
Powder?
That film. They went on to go to make Jeepers Creepers. Yeah.
Can I have anything? Can I have one thing? I wanted the boy
Absolutely
that controls
not.
Electricity.
I'm going to tell you what, for this new Michael Jackson documentary coming out, I'm going to say get yourself a blindfold and get yourself some earmuffs and don't go see it if you're worried about having your heroes ruined.
Quick side story when it comes to Michael Jackson. So our friend Daniela Panetta, she was in the screening and she texted me on Instagram, was like, this is going to be sending some shockwaves throughout the community because they had victims all lined up there and they were speaking about what Michael Jackson
listen to
did
Beat
to them.
It now.
Get it all in now. Get your
get
thriller
in
now. And then I immediately, because you know, all of us here are just massive news junkies. So I'm just flipping through the paper. And then I see, I think this was in New York Times art section, the director of the new Michael Jackson musical that's supposed to hit Broadway. And he was talking about how he's like, we're taking Michael from a different approach. He was complex.
Imagine
he was complicated. I'm like, I think your Broadway play is going to get totally shelved.
The thing is music is eternal. And can beats molest a child? Can grooves ruin a child's life? I don't think so.
I don't,
and that's why we're featured nothing but grooves, and they just call it Beat It. Because maybe they'll get away with it by just naming the songs.
Yeah, after one
you know
of the most
mean?
Aggressive.
And never naming his.
Yeah, name it the most aggressive song title that he has, Beat It. That's a perfect way to do it. Anyway, so that is going to be a firestorm in the media. But anyway, I just want to tell this one story about when the cop found the little dongler.
Oh, my God. This fucking bullshit.
So we got these cops, and they are like, I don't know, early 90s masculine. So they are just weird. So the cop, they magically stumble upon this dingler, and the cop looks at it. He puts his boot on top of it and is just like, here. Here it is.
And he points at it as far away as possible, they said. It's like he raised his hand up to eyeball level and pointed down because just the idea of touching a man's dismembered penis would make him gay.
That's what because he's like, I'm a very religious man, so I can't touch. So John Wayne Bobbitt's cock is just being smothered like a cigar in an airport bar by some random boot. And it is, I just thought that was great.
So if he was by himself, if he found a dismembered penis in the field, would he just pick it up and just go like, kisses, and it's like pop it in his mouth and suck on it like it's the spark plug like in Coneheads?
I have
when he's cleaning the spark blood and he's spigot out and be like, nah, it's clean.
I have no idea what this cop was scared of, but evidently that was a bit too far for him to go. So
there's also a spoiler that I don't even know if we should bring up, but it is pretty funny at the very end of John Wayne Bobbitt when they cut to him pulling away and it shows
he
went ahead and made himself a vanity Donald Trump license plate that says DJ Trump.
It's DJ Trump.
Yeah, DJ Trump, which takes quite a bit of, it's just perfect.
It's just too spot on.
Because he's just a dickless, he's literally a dickless bully that came from trash and continued his trash legacy into the future.
Yes, well, it is pretty remarkable. And this is not, I understand, you know, there's...
But then look at us. We're still talking about him. We're not even talking about Lorena Bobbitt when you shit she went through.
We can change that, though. We can change that right now. Yep. Yes, of course, he is. And I'm not, whatever. Everyone's different. There's a lot of reasons for everything. But he is, like, when you think about, like, true D-bag, like, that was just, like, when you see someone with a, I don't care what president you like, you should never, like, fall in love and, like, fetishize the president to the point where you have a vanity license plate. DJ what Trump, and then on his motorcycle, it just says Trump. And I'm like, what are you trying to prove? Nobody cares.
What kind of puke? I don't care if a fuck who the president is.
Whatever.
I don't give a shit who the fuck it is. But you're really rooting for him that hard?
When it comes
honestly, unless it's Taft.
And of course, and it just fits so nicely on a vanity plate. Taft, of course.
Yes.
So, yes, lastly.
Yeah, my other car is a bathtub. It says, and it's like, come on, that's fun.
Woohoo! Oh, this is the content people love.
People, it is free, though.
It is free. Yeah, that's very true.
So that is good.
So
that
just
is,
lastly about John Wayne Bobbitt, and we'll talk a little bit about Lorena. So he had his penis cut off, and then he wanted to do porno, so he wanted to get for Frankenweenie, or Frankenpenis, a full-on, like, puffed-up extension, both width and girth. Turns out he went to the wrong doctor, totally mangled his penis. It can no longer work. It's completely not functioning. So he actually had a good surgery the first time to replace it, and then because of his vanity, because of his vain personality, he ruined it, and I just thought that was perfect.
It was a cash grab.
Yes.
Because he was saying everybody's so excited to see my dick.
Oh, yeah.
Just being like, you're disgusting because it's a sideshow, dude.
Exactly. You are a sideshow and not even a sideshow character that we love and admire because I do like a lot of sideshow characters.
Lorena Bobbitt's story and it becoming was very, very inspiring.
Awesome.
And the way she changed her life to change her, like, give back to the community, all the kind of love she got from victims of domestic violence all over the world. That she went and she took care of. She put a lot into understanding that she got the spotlight from this crazy tabloid story.
Right.
And so she then used it. And I thought that it was very, it's very illuminating for people to see just how much mayhem and shit can happen in somebody's house and how, like, the people need networks. It's like, you know, like, she really, it is not an easy choice to leave. The way they talk about this, they talk about the most vulnerable point for a woman from leaving an abusive partner is the 6 months after she already breaks up or when they break up. A lot
of
times
never
that's
know when
what
they're
escalates.
Gonna, yeah, they're going to kill you.
Yes,
John Wayne Bobbitt was
going
to kill you. And to that point, so just anyway, I know we're kind of all over the place here, so bear with us. But just to go back just briefly, when it comes to the trial, John Wayne Bobbitt was on trial for abusing Lorena. He was found not guilty because the trial was kind of a sham. The judge only let 5 days be accounted for, 2 days before and 3 days after, or something like that. It was a 5-day window that the judge allowed to be taken into consideration when it comes to abuse. So he was found totally not guilty. He was walking. Lorena was found guilty by reason of insanity, did 45 days in the psych ward. Anyway, so Lorena gets out.
Hey, man, and I'm begging for 45 days in a psych ward. Honestly, it sounds really relaxing.
I don't think it looked that. It was at the prison.
That was, I mean, that one was, but I mean one that I'll be
no.
Made
you
to
need
go to.
You need like what's it called? What's the rehab place? Something of Malibu.
Yes. I want to say it's called like Escalades of Malibu or Waterfalls of Honolulu, where you go and it's just you sit in a lawn chair, but no one can really see that you're handcuffed to the lawn chair.
Right. Yeah, that would be perfect. So Lorena, because she was able to do what she did and defend herself, obviously she got a lot of outreach from people who were victims of domestic violence. She parlayed that into doing a lot of speaking engagements for her own therapy in many ways too, and she has saved countless lives. So she does a bunch of wonderful things, and she has a great little husband. I love Dan. I think it's Dan. Big Dan.
I love him.
So she was able to bring it together, save lives, help people. John Wayne Bobbitt, as you can imagine, is going to die alone, sad, in a crappy little place, and that just shows you what you put into the world is what you're gonna get out.
You say it with the fake accent, but you're correct.
Yes,
because I really believe that John Wayne Bobbitt is a piece of shit, and he will never get any sort of success out of this.
No.
He's just a piece of shit.
No, absolutely. And all those times you saw him on Stern, all the Frankenweenies, Frankenpenis, all those pornos, he didn't get a dime because he got hoodwinked by everyone because he was around. You can imagine the disgusting people. And Lorena had a couple of people that used her, too. But yes. Nothing as bad as John Wayne Bobbitt. And again, you know what? Well, he's a moron, so.
He leaned in because he's a classless piece of shit.
So anyway, check out the Lorena documentary. So here, it's well worth it.
There's a story that has happened. I guess this is happening in Philadelphia, and it happened over this
weekend. Ooh, yeah.
Now, it says people that we've got reached out to by a bunch of listeners, and it turns out to be this story is going viral. And it's this copy of this letter that seemed to have been left in people's mailboxes over the weekend in Philadelphia. I haven't gotten a number on exactly how many.
Yes.
It comes from what I believe is an entity known as ABBA. It is just a letter. It is on a piece of paper. Just a sheet of paper.
Is it an entity named ABBA?
I don't know what it is.
It's probably a person.
ABBA. Who knows? I don't know if it is the ABBA, and I'm certain the ABBA is actually upset. They could actually sue for this.
It's not ABBA the band. I'm just saying, I think it's a... Okay, all right. Anyway, it says ABBA at the
top. Okay. Yeah. All right, so this is what the letter read that was given to... looks like probably about 100 people in Philadelphia this weekend. ABBA. This is to inform you that all the food ate since first grade is alive in your body, especially the dead animal remains or meat, since it was cooked alive and is alive in your body. Anywhere it goes now, you must go with it. That's 365 days a year from first grade to now. Breakfast, lunch, dinner. Also, newborn baby received your first grade body or a meal just like the 365 days a year. Breakfast, lunch, dinner. The only way I see for you to save yourself from the every which away of being burned alive that's scheduled is to become a solid steel statue by place yourself under anesthesia and mixing your body with melted metal, then re-solidifying the metal or seal yourself in cement. That's an option.
Oh,
the cement is an option.
That's an option. Okay, good.
When it becomes real to you, you can type it up and have a lot of copies made, then pass them out and post them up. Oh. What is needed is a steel furnace where metal can be melted and the bodies of people and animals mix with the metal to become steel, unable to be hurt. Of course, you'll be sedated first. There will be, that is just the letter B, a meeting on April 27th, 2019, 12 o'clock in the afternoon on the subject of building a steel furnace at 27th and Gerard Avenue on the vacant lot. What we need is a bulldozer to dig some ditches and steel furnace equipment. Do attend.
All right, so this is sort of like it's sort of like the game of Clue. Remember
yes.
that when they were all going and they're like, well, we got this bizarre letter. We were just told to attend. So I would say this. If you're in the Philadelphia area and you got strong friends, maybe bring a Ben Kissel with you. Ben Kissel, it works out. Go there and see what the hell is happening and report to us, please. What is going to be happening late April in this vacant parking lot? And really, worst case scenario, you do learn how to build a steel furnace, and that could be good for crafts, good for ceramics, good for banking cups or bowls, vases, whatever you might want.
It just seems to be bizarre. I mean, obviously, there is some footage here. I'm actually looking up right now. There is some security cam footage of what looks to be an older gentleman in a winter hat, a big floppy hat. He looks kind of like an elf, hand distributing the letters up and down the street. Now, this seems to come from a one of those pinhole cameras.
Oh, yes. I forget the name of what's it called? Snap or You're on Camera Now. I think it's called You're on Camera Now. Yeah.
And so this man is just going from house to house with an arm full of papers, just delivering them to each house. They said cops in Philly are saying, just report it. We don't know what the hell this is going to be.
Right.
I'm really would be, I mean, impressed if on April 27th, 2019 at noon, if you showed up at that parking lot and it was ABBA playing their first single from their new album, Do Attend.
Oh, whoa.
That would be incredible.
That would be awesome.
If they really got the homeless street team going.
I mean, I think that's great. And no matter what, this person... If you build it, they will come. And it looks like there is now a Facebook event for the Vacant Lot Furnace Festival. Now they're calling it the Vacant Lot Furnace Festival, which I love Philadelphia, where they're like, okay, cool. We'll go. Vacant Lot Furnace Festival, not a big deal. That's a horrible accent, but it is what it is. 27th and Gerard. So get out there. April, what is it? April
27th at noon, 2019. My problem is that what if it's just a guy just shows up with his dick out? I mean, that could be the show.
Well, that's possible. But I think if you have a lot of other people there blaring music from their cars, maybe try to choose the same song. Maybe ABBA would be a good band to play just collectively as a group. Pop a couple of Coors, have a good Philadelphia time, get some cheesesteaks out there. I think it would
be good.
This guy might accidentally bring the community together.
I mean, honestly, this could be a new festival. You start the Steel Furnace Festival. You show up. They're starting a GoFundMe for mental health in the Philadelphia area that they're calling it Do Attend. And they said because the Furnace Letter went viral, they're trying to get people out there to give money to. I have no clue if this is legit or not, so I'm not going to fully
pump
it. But a part of it is, like, so there's stuff like people are really trying to flip it into something important. But I tell you what, man, wouldn't it be nice to have the ability to just turn into a steel statue? Then nothing can fucking hurt you. Then I'm here. I'm full steel statue me. Walking through the parking lot, looking for the person who dared defend my Prius was innocent.
Well, your Prius is a Prius, so no Prius is totally innocent. They're still a Prius.
My Prius is innocent.
You cannot be an innocent Prius. That's just my, clank, I don't call it what clank, it is. Maybe it's carist. Clank, I don't know.
Clank.
But.
Clank. And then all of a sudden, all the families are running from me, and they said, oh, he came from the Steel Furnace Festival.
Right, absolutely.
Oh, he must be brave enough to have went there to Philadelphia April 27th at noon.
Does this man have... Just to try to armchair diagnose, obviously. I know, breaking news, we're not actual doctors.
What do you mean?
Richard Chase, he was always talking about how things inside of his body were alive. And is this a schizophrenia, do you think? Because there is...
It's certainly not measles.
No, it's not measles. Honestly, you can take our word to the bank on that.
Yes, he... is obviously a very lost individual that is trying to reach out, or he's an artist.
Could be.
Which is why take one away from the other?
Absolutely.
The artist could be very sick and still be distributing these letters. It does seem to be someone that seems to be similar to the gang stalking type writing, the way it's all kind of misspelled and weirdly put together. There was a man that used to come when I used to work at Eckerd's, right? I think I've talked about this on the show, but there was a period of time where I worked at the photo developing section of an Eckerd's, which are now basically CVS's, back before it was digital, back when I used to have to wear big rubber gloves up to my elbows and actually soak shit.
Oh, yeah.
Cancer causing chemicals that I should never have been allowed to touch.
Well, a regular Robin Williams in 1 hour photo, which is actually a good Robin Williams film. I have to apologize for Robin Williams now.
He's a very good performer in that film as well. He is obviously a very good performer. And so I was doing this, but there was this weird older gentleman, because John Moreno, that was in Murderfist, also used to work with me. And we were always drunk at work and fucked up. And so, but this guy used to come in and he'd be like, "Hi, you got any gold coins today?" And we're like, because that was the time when the dollar coins were big. Dollar gold coins were new. And so you'd give us dollars and we'd give him gold coins in exchange. And because he loved his gold coins. Well, thank you so much. I like to spend my gold coins like I'm a leprechaun. We're like, cool, great, sure, whatever, man. But then he started bringing these Xerox papers that are very similar to the ABBA letter.
Mm.
Where he would say, being like, you got to... It was this whole program that he had built out that said... Me and John, he put John and Henry in the contract, and he said, I have to sign this contract in order to make him do push-ups till his arms go crickety-crackening. And he was just like, you got to make me do the push-ups till my arms go crickety-crackety.
You should sign
and then,
that contract.
Because if not, because he said, if his arms don't go crickety-crackety and we let him stop doing push-ups, then he's got to hold the bricks down. He said, I got to hold the bricks down unless you make me do. And you got to sit on me. You got to come and sit on me. And it was more centered on John because he seemed to be sexually fixated on John and asking him all the time if he had a boyfriend. And saying, come in, like, you can come. I get naked. I do the push-ups. You make me do the push-ups. And if not, you beat me and you make me hold the bricks down.
Great. Well, that's what you want.
So, yeah. I'm certain he's doing great.
I'm sure he's doing great. Like maybe he's
owned a building. He was one of those guys that did that thing where he was left to his own after whoever was last taking care of him
right.
passed on. And so he owned property in Tallahassee, and he used to like walk around all the time. And we knew he was worth a bunch of money, but he was just this crooked, weird gay homeless leprechaun.
Well, you know, he liked to work out, and that's good for the body. So I think John could have helped him out a little bit with that. Hopefully his bones are to this day going crickety crack. We wish the best for the creepy man who used to come into the Eckerds in South Florida. So that's another layer of creepy.
That was the darkest period of my life.
Great. All right.
I'm pretty certain because I used to get a little handle of Evan Williams and before shift every night, because this is when I was also living out of my car for a period of time. So I'd go and like I'd suck down to Evan Williams behind a machine so the bosses wouldn't see, even though they got cameras behind. I know they're saying. So I used to crouch down and suck on Evan Williams.
You reek like Evan Williams.
Yes.
They knew.
I used to go sleep in my Hyundai Elantra.
Yes. Why didn't you have a house?
It was a time.
It was a time.
There was a time there. It was between houses.
Ah.
And then all of a sudden, it was between places. And you know when you're at a level of, like, I don't know if you've done that, where you're just such a trash heap as a human being that I was just like, fuck it. I'll just sleep in my fucking car. Well, so it was just me eating KFC and drinking whiskey and sleeping in my car.
Honestly, there's something kind of fun about that, of course.
It was.
Growing up is
no rules.
Growing up is an interesting time. You know, I mean, that's nice though. We didn't have parents who gave us money, so it was just like you sleep in your car. You don't have a lifeline the way that some folks do. And of course, if I really needed money, I'm sure my parents would have been fine. But I'm not. I need my parents. I just didn't want to call.
I was cut off.
Live from your grave. Live from your grave.
Well, all right. So let's get to a story. It's not quite as possibly fun as the funeral festival would be. I really hope that turns out to be a place where people find love. It's going to be better than the fire festival, guaranteed. But
Dancing queen. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, him just slapping his dick.
He can do it as long. Whoever organized it, I will say, can do whatever they want. If they are isolated and alone, they cannot do anything.
Yes.
But yeah, whatever. You're the organizer. You get a little bit of carte blanche. But now we mentioned on last episode, towards the end, we were going to read some of these email exchanges from Conrad Roy and Michelle Carter. Of course, Michelle Carter, the gal who, let's just say, pushed him over the edge. You know, a good motivating head coach can get their team to do great things, and she is like the opposite of that.
So, no, well, actually, technically, she is that. She's Phil Jackson.
But the opposite, because they won 6 championships and this man committed suicide.
I mean, yeah, that in that way, you are correct.
Yes, and we do have an email I want to read, because some people that listen went to school with Conrad, and apparently he was a very nice guy, and it's very sad.
I bet he was. She looks like a fucking alien.
She is horrifying.
She's got a big old forehead and those piercing eyes. She's going to be... I'm afraid of what... basically, she just got sentenced to 15 months in jail.
She got sentenced.
And I was like, I wonder what the hell's going to happen to her once she gets into prison. I feel like it's just going to harden her into even be a more fucking deep-end bitch.
I have no idea. I mean, I don't know about physically. I don't even care. I don't want to comment on that because, quite frankly, there's something about those piercing eyes. But she's a horrible person. So let's just read. Henry will read Michelle, and then I'll read a little bit of Conrad's responses. And then we'll just talk about it, because I mentioned on the last episode, like, should a person be sentenced to prison time for texting someone to do something bad? Is it still on the person to have personal responsibility? But it seems like this goes a little bit above and beyond, because the dude was like, literally, help me. And then she was like, no, how about
no,
I
we'll
don't?
Go,
let's
read through these texts so you can actually hear what it sounds like to have somebody completely manipulate you and push you in a place that you didn't need to be pushed.
Okay.
It's very fucked. It's very fucked. I'll start with Michelle. Conrad, hey, you there?
Oh, hey, sorry, I fell asleep.
It's okay. Why haven't you done it yet, though?
I'm too messed up to.
What are you talking about?
My head.
You can't think about it. You just have to do it. You said you were going to do it. Like, I don't get why you aren't.
I don't get it either. I don't know.
So I guess you aren't going to do it then. All that for nothing. I'm just confused. Like, you were so ready and determined.
I am going to eventually. Really, I don't know what I'm waiting for. but I have everything lined up.
No, you're not, Conrad. Last night was it. You keep pushing it off, and you say you'll do it, but you never do. It's always going to be that way if you don't take action. You're just making it harder on yourself by pushing it off. You just have to do it. Do you want to do it now?
Is it too late? I don't know. It's already light outside. I'm going to go back to sleep. Love you. I'll text you tomorrow. Love you. Oh, my God.
No! It's probably the best time now because everybody's sleeping. Just go somewhere in your truck and no one's really out right now because it's an awkward time. If you don't do it now, you're never going to do it. All you can say, you'll do it tomorrow, but you probably won't. Love you.
Oh, my God. Thank you.
This is a fucking monster. She's a fucking monster.
Oh, my God. Thank you.
There's a couple of things she says here, like, you're so hesitant because you keep overthinking it and pushing it off. You just need to do it, Conrad. The more you push it off, the more it will eat at you. You're ready and prepared. All you have to do is turn the generator on, and you be free and happy. No more pushing it off. No more waiting.
And then she plays with him. She says, I would never leave you. You're the love of my life, my boyfriend. You're my heart. I'd never leave you.
You are literally killing him.
Good Lord.
You're literally killing him. And then afterwards, when this whole thing went down, basically, she pretended like she didn't know where he was and talked to his family and said they had no clue that all of this shit went down and when acted all surprised when the body was found. So she knew what she was doing, too.
Like, oh, she didn't know. She posted on Facebook or Twitter or something being like, I'm grieving. I can't believe I lost my boyfriend. She wanted to get that sympathy card.
She's just fucked, man.
Yes.
She is just a fucked ass bitch.
She is horrible. And of course, she also says, horrible. And you can't break a promise and just go into a quiet parking lot or something. She really dives deep. And she continues to tell him that she loves him in between. So she is obviously, this man's already extremely depressed and sad. And being 18 years old sucks. And so she's like, I love you. Do it. I love you. Like, I can. So she just had him running in circles mentally.
Yeah.
And
I think a part of it, too, is that I'm not going to. When it comes to Michelle Carter, is that she was also 17 years old. So it's weird how you get into these like thought loops, I think, as younger, too. This like concept of this high drama. Because like, your emotions are going like crazy. And so you believe in some shape or form that she is in a television show almost with Conrad.
Well, and sometimes, like, yeah. And the separation of the screen is real.
Yes.
You know?
Because you don't understand. You don't fully understand you're talking to somebody like and what you're doing because it's all separate. You're doing all over fucking text. It's not like she's there where it's like, how fucked up would she have been able to, like, how fucked up would she have been if she had to do it like in front of him?
Oh,
like,
my
forcing
God.
Him to do
it's
it.
It's horrible. So we got this email from Kayla, and this is what she just has to say. I'll just kind of paraphrase some of it, but she's like, hi, guys. Heard you guys want some opinions on Michelle Carter and Conrad Roy. She went to school with Conrad Roy. She says he was just a bit younger than me. They had gym class together, and they were on the school's track team as well. A close friend of mine had befriended him and introduced us to him in gym class. He was joking and having fun with her as I remarked on what a unique and weird name Conrad was. I remember thinking how nice he was and how friendly he was. It haunts me. Years after this, his mother came into the clothing store I worked at to find a dress for his funeral. So it's very sad. She goes on to obviously say horrible things and accurate things about Michelle. So this guy was just a normal 18-year-old boy, and you can just imagine when you're a parent losing a kid like that and under those circumstances. I fully understand the rage that they must feel towards Michelle, and I understand that's why the Justice Department or that's why law enforcement got involved. So I guess the question then is, what does this do? Because, of course, Michelle Carter and her defense attorneys appealed, saying, yo, dude, she just sent some text messages, but they're so intense. And
it's just – it's completely irresponsible because he had already, I mean, like, how many guys out there and women, how all of a sudden you realize you've put yourself into an almost this a vulnerable spot with somebody else where you've kind of given over control of your will. Like, it seems to be he was so in a pit of depression,
right,
which I can kind of understand. It's like a part of being like,
it's a part of being a teenager, honestly.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And also, true depressive episodes, a lot of times they're almost being like, you fucking do it. You tell me what to do. You do it. Because the sheer effort of directing your will, because a lot of what depression is not just acute sadness. It's not just crying. It's also you are fucking, you feel nothing.
Right.
Like you don't care about anything.
And of course.
And it goes so deep that you're almost to a point where you're just being like, whatever, if you literally just stop hassling me, I'll do it.
Right. And of course, continuing on with Kayla's email here, she says, learning that Michelle went on after his death to help organize a fundraiser for mental illness in his honor. It was called Homers for Conrad. It is disgusting. And that really does bring it into like the next level of like, you drove this man to commit suicide. Would he have done it without those texts? We don't know. We just know for a fact that she definitely didn't help the case.
She didn't help.
To manipulate all of that and put on fundraisers
and try to seem
like a Mother Teresa, although Mother Teresa was no Mother Teresa herself. But that
I love that lion bitch.
Yeah.
That lion bitch. She loved the television cameras.
She did.
She's like a Nancy Grace.
Yeah.
Which is weird if you can think of, you can compare those two. I think this not going to be the last time we're going to hear from Michelle Carter. I think she's going to do fucked up shit in the future. I think that this is literally a psychopath in the making, and this is the first taste, and unfortunately, prison may make her worse.
I mean, or does she just go down, as we've seen, you know, when we were watching, going back to the Lorena documentary, we haven't changed. Our society mm-hmm. has actually gotten worse when it comes mm-hmm. to glorifying bad behavior and when it comes to making people celebrities simply because of crime. We've talked about this on past episodes. So
yes.
I wouldn't be surprised if Michelle Carter does a media tour, writes a book, and I'm sure, as Ted Bundy had sympathizers and Adam Lanza had sympathizers, I am sure she is going to have sympathizers.
Of course.
And I wouldn't be
Absolutely.
Surprised if she's going to be able to, because she was found guilty, I'm not sure what the legal logistics are when it comes to profiting off of this, but she's going to be a celebrity.
Later on, you can sell your own story. I believe you can. I believe that you can figure that out. I mean, she's also young. So maybe
yeah.
she's got the years. Maybe she's got the years ahead of her that are gonna teach her that life's a fucking precious thing, and that people come and go real fast, and you are going to eventually. Because I know I've gotten more sensitive as I've gotten older. This is me sensitive.
This is you sensitive?
This is me sensitive.
Well, you used to be calmer. I do think you used to be more calm.
What are you talking about?
I think you used to be a little bit more calm.
Now I got things to fight for.
I guess so.
See, everything. I got my back against the wall, Kissel.
I know what you're up to. Well, no, you're currently just stalking to some degree. Like, you're a character in Resident Evil 2, the reboot, which, again, you have to play. You're just in a parking garage with, like,
a magnifying
glass trying to find the person to hit your car.
When it comes down to, someone's going to be thankful
for me. What if
it's
The Rock? If it's just, like, this buff dude?
Because get his autograph.
It's near a gym. You park near a gym. What if it's just like the biggest dude, and then you have to be like, so just wanted to let you know you hit my car, sir, and I just thank you for hitting.
No, I mean, Natalie hates when I say it, but I'm gonna, you know, to kind of pull a Bundy. You know what I mean? I get a crutch and a cast. And I act like I'm all hurt and stuff. I think just by sheer surprise, I can whack him in the nuts, right? Or what I do is I play an extended game of cat and mouse where I leave messages for spirit. But don't ask for money. Just ask for do kind of like in Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Right.
Where all of a sudden he's got to do weird public stuff. Like I act like I'm a part of a massive network of secret keepers.
So you want to be a lone gang stalker. You want to gang stalk this man for hitting accidentally sideswiping your Prius.
Doesn't look that accidentally.
All right. So let's do, we're going to conclude this episode with a little fan sent, I guess, kind of creepypastas, but it's about Skinwalkers.
Skinwalker Ranch. After we did last week's episode of Skinwalker Ranch, we asked for people to send in whatever stories or any information they had about Skinwalkers, people they've talked to, and we got a bunch of fun-ass emails.
We did.
But I really want to go through.
So we're going to read those in 1 second. Just before we do that, I just want to read this one story because it's freaking cracking me up. So this is this dude. This is a misunderstanding at a Home Depot in Wichita, Kansas. The headline is, I'm fixing to blow it up. Bathroom warning mistaken for bomb threat at Home Depot. A report of a bomb threat at a Home Depot store in Kansas turned out to be a big mistake. misunderstanding. Someone at the store in Wichita called 911 after a customer reportedly said they overheard a threat in the store's restroom. We just had a customer here.
I'm fixing to blow it up.
We just had a customer here who may have made a bomb threat, the caller said. By the way, what happens in the bathroom, what's said in the bathroom, stays in the bathroom, random caller. He said, somebody told me there's a bomb in here and you need to leave the building. He said it three times. So the guy took a dump and is just like, there is a bomb
Was he talking to himself?
I don't
know. Was he literally doing the thing where he's like, all right, about to blow this fucker up.
And then well, this is like, so please.
blowing up, dropping the bombs.
Police did some investigating and learned the bomb threat came from a man in the bathroom stall warning others about the severity of his need to use the restroom. He said, you all need to get out of here because I'm fixing to blow it up. And that was one witness said he laughed at the remark and took it as a joke. And so this caller, I understand, see something, say something. Maybe Home Depot in Wichita, Kansas isn't the front line of the war on terror. But nonetheless, I love this story because then you just have to be like, officer, I had to poop, officer. And they're like, we'll take it down. We'll note it.
Yeah. Yeah, if you want to see it, I took some pictures of it for my friends, because I tell you what, I dropped an A-bomb. Wait a second.
Whoa.
Stop. Get these cuffs off me. I mean, no, but if a man's got a belt hitched under his belly, right?
Right.
He's not a terrorist.
No.
He's not a terrorist because if you got a belt, like the shirt tucked into underneath the gut and stuff, that belies a father-like confidence.
Sure.
That shows you want people to see the wealth that you have attained in this life.
In your belly,
you have an extra 8 inches of batter attached to your frame.
Absolutely. And, you know, just take into account where you are. Is the person laughing? Would this be the place that you would be fixing to blow up if you're in the bathroom? Yes. Yes, it is.
Are you at the New York Stock Exchange or the water supply for Los Angeles? I don't know where you go. Like, are you on top of the Hoover Dam? And he says, I'm fixing to blow this up. That's a good indicator
that
maybe some terrorism's involved.
Yes, but not in a Home Depot in Wichita.
No,
anyway, funny story.
Absolutely.
And I just feel bad for the guy because you know he just had to go to the bathroom so bad, and then you get out of the bathroom, there's a bunch of cops around, and you're like, how bad
what
was
do I
it?
Do? I know I dropped a loaf, but I didn't know it was the criminality. I'm sorry, I confess to the crime. It was me. I had lentil soup for breakfast. Because it was left by my wife, and she said, I need the fiber.
Oh, my God. What a guy. Anyway, he's the legend of the week. I come up with different things of the week, and I'm saying the man who took a dump in Wichita is legend of the week or hero
of the
week.
We don't need segments, Kissel. We're bigger and faster and stronger than segments.
Well, technically, I kind of announced them after we've already done the story, and then it's not really a segment. But I'm a producer. You know, I produce.
We are producers.
Yeah, I produced on TV for a year. I know how to do that.
I remember those years.
Lead in 1 year.
I remember. And then, yeah, Travis is a producer as well.
Yes, Travis is a producer. You know that.
This is what we do. We generate content. There are people listening to this right now that trust us.
I hope that they do. So anyway, let's do these emails.
This is an email from Lauren. Kind of Skinwalker related. Kind of not.
Okay, cool.
Hey, guys, I wanted to send this story to you all for a while now, but the recent Skinwalker Ranch episode made me feel like now would be the right time to send it. I didn't think it would be really considered a Skinwalker story, but it has fallen under the umbrella of weird creature phenomenon taking place on farms. All right, so my mother's friend from high school claims this happened to him while he was still going to high school in the 80s. We don't know whether or not it happened or not, or it was a trick of the imagination, blah, blah, blah. We know this, sure, but it's a fun story. This is the story of my town's paranormal incident. The Devil Dog.
Ooh.
I came from a very small rural town in East Tennessee among the Appalachian Mountains. A majority of the families here either work in the farming or coal industry. My mother's high school friend, we'll call him Steve, good fake name.
Great name.
Was going out with his brother to their farm one evening after school, and they noticed that the cows were tightly huddled together, which seemed odd to them. There's an old wives' tale that when cattle huddle together, there's a storm approaching.
Ooh.
However, there was nothing in the weather forecast that suggested this, although they thought that this was strange
They just shrugged it off and decided to go on with their work on the farm. Steve sent his brother, we'll call him Brad, good friend's brother's name.
Steve and Brad, okay.
Steve and Brad, good. Those are good blank names.
Great, love it.
To go get something out of the shed. Brad obeyed and went off to the shed. A few minutes later, Brad comes sprinting out of the shed screaming. Before Steve could ask what was wrong, this creature ran out of the shed behind him. Now listen to this description. It had the body of a dog, the legs and hooves of a goat, and the head of a rabbit. Naturally, the two brothers piled in their truck and drove off as fast as possible. The creature chased them until they got a decent distance away, and although the brothers drove away, they parked at the edge of their property and still watched the creature that had made its way on top of a hill on the farm. Steve says the creature walked around in a circle a few times like a dog finding the right place to lie down and then proceeded to dig its way into the ground.
Cool.
And so what they said here, a few weeks went by. Steve and Brad had not seen any sight of the creature again. A doctor and his son moved into a small town that was on Steve and Brad's property. So one day, while the doctor and his son were having dinner with Brad and Steve's family, Steve thought it would be funny to get the doctor's son scared as a bit of fun hazing since he was new to town. Steve said, hey, you better watch out for the devil dog on the farm. He'll get you. The doctor's son didn't even flinch or replied, oh, there's no need to worry about that. That's my friend.
Oh, my
Steve and Brad
goodness.
Had no idea how to handle this response, and the family just went on with the evening. A few weeks later, the doctor's son killed himself by shooting himself in the room.
Oh, my. Wow.
It's just fucked up.
That is a crazy, crazy story. Devil
There's
dog.
A couple of we'll talk about there's some connection to the Bell Witch, because the main creature that was mentioned in that had the body of a dog and the head of a rabbit.
Interesting.
That's kind of very interesting.
And I have a little tag on Puffin that says devil dog that we got in Florida when we were there for your wedding.
That's so cute.
Yeah, he's a German Spitz. All right. Well, this story comes in from Liz. I'm going to leave the last name out just because. This is from Liz. Dear Last Podcast, she says the name of their family. Emily, Elizabeth, and Michael absolutely love the podcast. Thank you so much. And particularly enjoyed the Skinwalker episodes. We decided to write because we spent many awful vacations, in parentheses, visiting our son of a bitch, piece of shit grandfather, Elmer. Okay. Let me know what you think.
How I feel about my fucking ex-grandmother.
I actually do love the alliterate son of a bitch, piece of shit grandfather, who lived directly across the street from Bottle Hollow. We could see the concrete teepee buildings and the reservoir from his property. We estimate his land was not more than a few miles from Skinwalker Ranch. Well, it seems like Elmer is in the right location to fit his mood. The area is extremely isolated, and there weren't other homes around for miles. Since the first time we visited, we were repeatedly warned about packs of wild dogs that roam the area. We were strictly not allowed outside at night and often heard howling and grunting. We wanted to rescue the dogs, but we were warned by our grandfather, parents, and anyone else we met to not approach. Not is all caps, so to not approach any dogs we saw. We did see one of the alleged packs once coming out of a ditch. We can only describe them as mangy mutts that looked more like coyotes. They didn't seem afraid of humans and sat and watched us from afar. Even when we went to the nearby town of Vernal, other kids would ask if we had seen the packs of dogs that lived in the basin. Elmer, of course, this is the piece of shit grandfather, repeatedly complained that bums were camping on his land, saying he saw fires in the night, and when he went to investigate, found circular rings of burnt grass throughout his property. He also lost many an emu. Yes, he raised emus to the pack of dogs, he said, finding them ripped to shreds but not eaten. He also had several animals drop dead. We mostly attribute that to him being a shitty farmer. Elmer eventually left due to an incident he will not talk about. All he said was, it got bloody. All we know is he did dig large pits and proceeded to shoot his animals and throw them in the pits. He left most of his belongings there. We would ask him more, but we thoroughly hate him and believe he is truly an evil man. Maybe that's what drew him to the area in the first place. Feel free to share. Utah is Utah, where the weirdness is rampant. Thank you so much, Liz. So it looks like their father or grandfather, perhaps, maybe he was being tormented by some skinwalkers himself, killing all of his cattle and whatnot.
honestly, with the weird rings on his property, which we know for a fact we're going to get into next week, some of the behavior of the whatever was going on at Skinwalker Ranch did present itself as weird rings and scoop marks and dead animals. And the lights in the forests are also very similar to many of the UFO sightings in Utah.
Yes, Utah's a beautiful place. A lot of sky out there. A lot of sky.
This is a letter I just want to read because I love this type of shit. It's about high strangeness mixed with magic that I think it's very fun. This is a great letter from Bug Eyes in the Night.
Okay.
By Justin. Hey guys, I had the day off, was working on the wife's car, listening to LPOTL, and the power of Guinness prompted me to share a story I thought you might find interesting. In 2012, I was living in Northeast Texas just off I-30, just getting into magic and the occult. I was experimenting with a lot of Crowleyan rituals and Ouija. I'm not saying that was the catalyst behind these events, but I was hungry for results and willing to throw caution to the wind because I'm a very peculiar type of stupid. Anyway, it was July 23rd. I was sleeping next to my wife when a bright light accompanied by a deafening noise was headed straight towards our bedroom window, which faced the interstate. I woke up with instant panic and shook my wife awake, thinking a truck had veered off the interstate and was headed straight for us. She was screaming. I was told to run, and I was going to bolt in the next room and grab our then one-year-old daughter. Next thing I knew, I was waking up from a sound sleep. What a vivid fucking scary dream. I was catching my breath, as you do after an intense nightmare, when at the foot of the bed, I immediately saw a figure just about 6 feet tall, wearing what I can only describe as a nun's habit, except dark purple. The skin was like the green of an olive, and the eyes look exactly like locust eyes. Wide and glassy and unblinking. I was horrified. I also found myself paralyzed and unable to run towards the creature, whom in my panic, I just wanted out of the room. That's when I woke up again. Holy fuck! What's wrong with my brain tonight? Then I heard my daughter crying. That wasn't unusual, but the fear in her cries made me bolt out of the bed into the room where she was supposed to be sleeping. The door to the room opened inward. She was standing behind it, shivering and crying. I wrapped her up in a blanket and took her to the couch in the living room. The curtains were opened, which overlooked some shrubbery, and on the front porch, where I saw a group of small gray, 5 or 6,
it was about
2 or 3 in the morning and very dark, running from the porch. When I awoke, it was daylight and I had fallen asleep on the couch with my daughter. My wife had no recollection of the truck. My daughter remembered nothing. A few months later, we moved to a house across town. I was still heavily into magical experimentation, still not taking the proper precautions, like an idiot. My daughter kept running. That wasn't even me. That was him.
Oh, my.
My daughter kept running from the room, screaming in the night. We just thought she was having a rough time sleeping. We would leave the bathroom light on for her as well as a nightlight, but the darkness in the room didn't seem to be an issue. So one night, my wife and I had planned to watch a meteor shower. We set alarms for the specific time, woke up to the alarm, and went out to find it cloudy. Disappointed, we skunked off the bed where my wife was awakened by the sound of a little boy crying that was so disturbing to her she wouldn't leave the bed and asked me to check on it.
Huh.
That's the husband's duty. We're supposed to die first.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what we're supposed to
do. Well, you're supposed to have a gun by your bed, I think. That's why.
I mean, well, that's what my whip. That's what I got.
Okay, that's good.
I thought perhaps some poor little guy was sleepwalking and woke up in our yard. I walked around the house and found nothing. Assuming she experienced an episode of vivid hypnagogia.
Hypnagogia.
I went to bed. Minutes later, my daughter came screaming from her room. I wrapped her in a blanket and we fell asleep in the recliner. The next morning, my wife noticed a number of red dots on my back that I could not explain. So this is some weird ass shit, man. You got to take care of yourself from doing magic because these kind of wiggity things show up in your fucking house.
Absolutely. So we're going to do one more listener email. Thank you all so much for sending these. By the way, again, you can do sidestoriesLPOTL@gmail.com. And, you know, we'll do this every now and again because it's really fun. So this one comes in from Lauren. She says she always loved paranormal stuff and read into it for years, but for some reason had never heard about this batshit paranormal haven in her own state. After I read the Nap book, this is according to her, I talked to my boyfriend at the time into reading it. This was 2009, and what a different time that was. 2009, just 10 years ago. Two different times, a different world. He said, as she continues, I wouldn't be at all in the present as it's much more known. But back then, despite knowing that the government owned it and watched the place, we were confident we could get in at night. So this is them. This is Lauren and her former boyfriend. I don't know what happened. I hope everything's okay. But they went to Skinwalker Ranch. So this is them coming up on Skinwalker Ranch. They say, she says, the town was tiny and sleeping when we got there. But what was surprising to me was just how isolated the ranch was. It didn't feel like it was part of the already tiny population of the place at all. We drove on a dirt road for miles and miles, lined with only a few watchtowers with no one in them before we were at the gate. And past the gate was another mile of dirt road until the actual home. She says she has a photo of it here as well. She says, I didn't know what I was expecting to see out there, but I feel like it was leaning towards nothing. Not that I didn't believe the stories, I just didn't believe it happened on one trip. But even so, it was such an unsettling place that not even my two friends, neither had read the book and one didn't believe in the paranormal at all, didn't want to get out of their car, and neither did I. Nobody was trying to scare each other. Nobody was being frantic. There was just a thickness and a tension when we got there, mostly we were quiet. It's truly, again, this is Skinwalker Ranch. It's truly a mile past the middle of nowhere out there. It's very dark, and you can see all the stars in the sky. We parked at the gate and turned the car off and tried to work up the balls to get out there. Meanwhile, there's not much to see other than blackness and sky, so our eyes were mostly on that. Pretty immediately, we all noticed weird orbs. They were bigger than a star and a different color, but could have been missed had they not started doing definitely not star shit. They zoomed her. Is that going to be in your official? They were doing not star shit.
Yeah, dude. That's exactly what it is.
They zoomed around each other and then behind the skyline, then would pop back up again and do it all over, all across the sky. It was like a weird dance. It was almost ridiculous. They'd get really bright and then disappear and then fade back in. I can't remember exactly, but there were about four or five of them, and we sat there and watched this for like 35 minutes, pretty much only saying to each other some variation of, huh? Huh?
Huh?
Hey?
Huh?
Huh? Should be noted that we were all ridiculously sober. Thank you for the note. Thank you for the note.
It's hard because that's what people immediately want to say. Be like, you were fucked up.
Of course.
And you're just like, oh, man. I mean, you could see weird shit without being fucked up. It's actually, it hurts you to be fucked up.
Absolutely. So she says she remembers the orbs from the nap book. She goes on to say, when we finally somehow decided that we definitely have to get out at some point, because we just drove 3 hours, we didn't make it too far down the dirt road. My non-believing friend's tough-ass boyfriend, who talked about nothing else for a month, and my own paranormal-loving ass were already not feeling cool with the place. We were walking real slow and only got maybe a quarter mile down the road before we saw some headlights in the distance, maybe 2 miles out there across the desert. We thought we might be caught, but they weren't coming in from the road that we had. There was no other road in that we knew of, but they were pointing towards us. We stood there and watched them for a second and tried to figure out exactly where they were going. But when they got to a hill and didn't actually follow the curve of it, but rather floated over it and blatantly defied physics, we fully embraced the excuse to fuck off pretty quickly back to the car. I didn't look back at it until the doors were shut, but then there were no more lights when I did look back. So that is a cool story. Thank you so much, Lauren, for the email.
I love this shit. I mean, that was a part of what they were saying. The more and more you get deep in her Skinwalker Ranch and you read the testimony from the people that were on the ranch, the part of the NIDS teams, they all basically said the same shit. It's just being like, whatever it is about just like the nature of the activity here, if it's real or not. But either way, it's creepy as fuck out here.
That's what it sounds like to me.
It sets the tone.
Absolutely. And a beautiful clear sky. I miss a good clear sky. I want to see a clear sky one of these days. We just don't get it there.
One day,
we don't get it
in
the cities. All right, everyone. Well, those are a couple of fun tales for this week. Thank you all so much for listening. Again, feel free to email your thoughts or some stories, side stories, lpotl@gmail.com. And if you want to make sure that they're real, just pop them in the old Google machine and
see what pops out.
You know, if there's just make sure there's like three other articles And then, I mean, you know, otherwise we can always find that stuff out too.
I can't, but, and I'll tell you what, man, I can't believe we lost Karl Lagerfeld yesterday.
Who?
We lost him yesterday, Karl Lagerfeld.
Who's Karl Lagerfeld?
The skinniest,
oh,
the skinniest, bitchiest skeleton to ever exist. And this is what he said on this topic of short men that I agree with.
Oh, wow. I'm surprised you agree with that.
Life is not a beauty contest. Some ugly people are great. What I hate is nasty, ugly people. The worst is ugly, short men. Women can be short, but for men it is impossible. It is something that they will not forgive in life. They are mean, and they want to kill you.
That's a Karl Lagerfeld quote?
Yes.
He's a psychopath. Right.
Yeah, he is a troublesome figure.
I didn't even see it trending on Twitter that I'm barely back on.
It's kind of funny about how things are... You didn't receive that news because the algorithm in the sky knows that you don't give a fuck.
Well, I don't. I mean, I know who you're talking about. He looks like a BDSM, like, nurse. I remember he always wore the black like he was Pinhead or something. He was very scary.
Yes, he definitely looks like an evil, rich butler.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
But he looks blind all the time. He's got big fucking sunglasses on.
Yes, I'm just happy the fashion industry is kind of falling apart in some way. Not, you know, unless you design clothes. I love all that stuff.
What are you talking about? No, it's not. The fashion industry is strong, my friend.
I don't think it is. The fashion week here in New York City has been in shambles. Shambles.
I'll tell you what. All I know is that we're pro Heidi here.
I love Heidi.
On this channel.
Oh, I see. You're just trying to make sure. Of course, we are pro Heidi. And thank you for having us at your Halloween party. No, and she dressed as I've been told it's not female Shrek, it's Fiona. And I love Heidi Klum, and she goes into it.
Those characters are the same.
No, I follow her on Instagram. Right? She's wonderful. But no, I think the Fashion Week stuff, some of the establishment figures aren't doing as well as they have in the past. But Heidi will always be, I mean, she is a mega star. She's a brand unto herself.
You would need to buy more magazines to know more about fashion, Kissel.
No one buys magazines.
They still do, but Natalie's very fashion god, so I see that the world is still big. Does Brooke not do the deep into the fashion, different?
No, she does it all. She does the Instagrams and the other stuff. She goes on the girly stuff. I don't know. I have no idea what she's up to. She's doing something.
She's doing something.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's plotting. She's plotting.
Well, everyone is always plotting. That's what I have learned.
Not me, man. I just react purely.
I don't know about all
that. I react purely.
All right, everyone. Thank you all so much for listening. Is there anything else that we want to say to these wonderful people? Keep on supporting all the shows here on LPN. All the shows are doing great because of you.
Live your dreams because no one else is going to. Laugh your laughs because people want to take them from you. And love your loves. But ask them first.
All right,
everyone.
You can
love them.
Well, you can also like love a muffin or a pizza, in which case you can just eat that.
That's not love, though, because it goes away.
Love does,
and you know what
love does go away.
It turns to shit.
Yeah, but that's also pizza doesn't go away. You can just get more pizza.
No, but you're just talking about the concept of pizza.
Yes, it never goes
not
away.
Not an actual physical pizza in front of you.
It can always, I just got them rotating through. Although
you just are, you are dying.
Yes.
That's the difference.
All right, everyone. Thank you all so much for listening. Hail yourselves.
Hail Satan.
Magustalations.
This show is made possible by listeners like you. Thanks to our ad sponsors. You can support our shows by supporting them. For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to lastpodcastnetwork.com.